This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Time to talk a little NBA right now. Final week of the regular season. Final couple days of the regular season. It's coming down to it for some seeding in either of the conferences. And other storylines, as this time next week, the NBA playoffs will be underway. Joining me to talk about that right now, when it's time to talk NBA, this is the guy I bring on. You can listen to him on SiriusXM NBA. You can get him on Twitter at HoopsCritic. He's on NBA TV as well. Brian Geltzeiler joining me on the show this evening. Geltz, appreciate you jumping in, man. How's it going tonight?
It's good, Shawnee. How we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Before we get into some NBA stuff here, we have a final college basketball championship game tomorrow night. I guess from an NBA perspective, is there anybody playing in that game tomorrow night that NBA fans should keep an eye on as possible draft fodder coming up in June?
Yeah, absolutely. Two players. Jared Culver on Texas Tech, first of all, is a guy that I think could really be a top five to top seven pick. Anybody you talk to in NBA circles will tell you that Jared Culver is plug and play. That's the way he is. So he's going to come in as a 6'6 type of long, you know, wing who can handle the ball. He hasn't shot it great in this tournament, but he can shoot it. And just like every other guy in that Texas Tech lineup, he's really evolved defensively. He's going to be able to step right on the floor for you defensively and defend at a very high level very early on. So he's certainly a guy. And then, of course, Brandon Hunter on Virginia. It's been a little strange with him just because with the way Virginia plays, it's real hard to show your talents. I mean, the shot that they take, DeAndre Hunter, I should say, the shot that they take is never the right shot that you should take in an offense. It's the latest shot. They just want to hold the ball. So a kid like Hunter has got a lot of ability and just struggles to be able to show it as a wing player on that team. It's because the way they run offense is just bizarre. So I think he's a guy that I know NBA scouts like a lot. I'm personally a much bigger fan of Culver. I think this game's going to translate much better.
Brian Geltzeiler joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Geltz, I was just listening to the update at the top of the hour on our network here. The Brooklyn Nets clinching a playoff spot for the first time in a while. What's the trajectory right now of that Nets team? Obviously, just being in the playoffs probably feels pretty good for that team, a young team. But what's the outlook? What's the prospectus for this team over the next couple of years?
They're kind of Clippers East. You know what I mean? Like they have all the cap space coming up. They got a couple of good young players. They have all of their draft picks right now. And they are a team that guys are looking at to go to as a free agent. When you have those two max cap slots, you make an inviting situation for two guys to go together. And when in terms of guys looking to go to locations, New York's a popular location right now. For whatever reason, it's New York. That there's guys that want to be there. You know, and so I know New York are two places you look at. The Knicks, for all of the talk about Durant and what they have, there's a whole lot of dysfunction going on there. And it's dysfunction that I don't know if you ever cure, but maybe it has a stink on you, on it that rubs off on you, if you know what I mean. Like it's not that ugly Knicks dysfunction and how well Brooklyn operates, what they've been able to do in terms of putting a good young team on the floor and granted, there's a big mix of veterans there who've done a great job in terms of instilling culture, but they have a certain way that they do things. Listen, Kenneth Faried wasn't doing things the way they wanted him to do it. They bought him out. He's been productive for Houston, but that's not a bad thing about Brooklyn. There's one way to do it. You're going to do it their way or you're not going to do it at all. And I think for free agents right now, Brooklyn's a really attractive place. So I think when you look, listen, they're not going to do anything this year in the playoffs. They may be a pain in somebody's rump in the first round. But I think when you look at what their future is, I think they're kind of going to be in the playoffs here going forward and to stay in the Eastern Conference because they're going to get somebody in free agency. They're probably going to re-sign D'Angelo Russell. And this is a really, really smart front office led by Sean Marks.
All right, so, you know, a big reason behind the Knicks strategy over the last year or so has been creating that salary cap space to go after guys. How problematic is it that there's a team in literally in the same city that can offer either can essentially, from what it sounds like you're telling me, Geltz, offer the same thing, which is space to bring in two star players that might want to play together.
Yeah, and a much more functional organization. Yeah. One of the biggest problems that the Knicks have is that they're not even aware of the fact of what a threat the Nets are. They are kind of in their own head and believe they've, you know, they kind of decided when they got rid of Phil Jackson, you know, Jim Dolan was going to wave a magic wand, put Steve Mills and Scott Perry in charge, and all of a sudden they got good culture. There's when it stinks from the owner on down, you're not going to have good culture. And listen, they made a great trade with the Porzingis trade. You know how I feel about that. But even a broken clock's right twice a day. I mean, you know, they ended up doing something good. But I do know this, and I have heard some of this through the grapevine, is that, you know, free agents looking in New York looked at that Dolan incident with the fan and the corresponding interview with Michael Kay and all the nonsense and BS that he threw out there. It was a major turnoff, And that type of stuff is become the norm with the Knicks. So who the heck knows what's going to happen here? I think Brooklyn's just as much in the mix for some of these big free agents as the Knicks are. And listen, it's not the worst thing in the world for either team if they don't get one, because they both definitely are young teams moving in the right direction, but Brooklyn is much further along on the ride.
Brian Geltzeiler joining me on CBS Sports Radio talking a little bit of NBA. All right, Geltz, so the back end of the Western Conference, 6, 7, and 8 are going to be some permutation of the Clippers, the Thunder, and the Spurs. I guess if you were a team that's in the top three seeds, is it a matchup-dependent thing, or is there a definite pecking order with those three teams? Kind of break that down for me.
I tell you this, and listen, the Clippers have done some fantastic stuff here this year. You have to give Doc Rivers and Lawrence Frank and Michael Winger and right up to Steve Ballmer and Jerry West, that whole front office and ownership group, just a fantastic amount of credit for what they've accomplished this year. But like when you look at what they're rolling out there tonight against Golden State, no Gallo, no Beverly. Like, this is a problem. Like, you get some of these, as much as they can go with the next man up stuff, you get these guys hurt on this team, that's a huge issue for you. A huge issue. So when I look at teams I'd want to face, listen, they're starting Wilson Chandler tonight in a game they need against Golden State. Like, when, if I'm one of these top three teams and I can draw the Clippers banged up, knowing that I may not have to face listen, Gallinari is their best player by a large margin. He has been so good for them. Knowing that I don't have to face Gallinari with them, that's not really anything I'm going to worry so much about. So I think, listen, when you look at the Spurs, the one thing about them is they have two guys that, not this season, but last season, were two of the 10 best players in the league, you know, Aldridge and DeRozan. And in a playoff situation, when you have two players that are probably, if we're going to be realistic about it right now, two top 15 to 20 players in the league, you got something going on there, and you can be a little bit dangerous in a playoff setting, certainly with who coaches that team. And then, listen, I think OKC's underachieved here towards the tail end of the season. I think Paul George's shoulder continues to be a major problem for them, but they can defend people, and they can guard people, and they have the potential to be the best defensive team in the NBA. So with them, you have to be a little bit nervous too. To me, as hard as the Clippers work and what they do, I still think out of those three, I would want to face the Clippers the most.
Geltz, I want to bounce my radical proposal, and I'm not the first one to propose this, but just when I think about the pecking order of teams and how certain teams look in 5 through 8 in these conferences, and sort of the manipulation that may go on at the end of the year with teams trying to play for certain seeding levels, what would you think about a system where the top four seeds could actually pick which team in 5 through 8 that they play in the first round?
I think it's fantastic. I really do. I would love to see each of those, because it would really only be the top three teams. Whoever's left is going to be stuck with whoever's left.
You're right.
But I would love to be able to see you getting home court. And pretty much from the time that the season ends, you have 24 hours to tell the powers that be at the league who you want to play. I think it'd be fantastic. Listen, I do it in a fantasy football league of mine in the playoffs. It's the best in that league. It would be, listen, I think when you have the best record, you should get to pick your opponent. Why don't you? The only rule I would like to see in place is that if they were going to do it that way, you can't pick a team that's earned home court. You know what I mean? So if one of the top four teams has a major injury at the end of the year, you can't go and grab a hold of that team when they've played, had a good enough record to play home court. So you can only pick 5 through 8. But I think it's a fantastic thing. The problem is, like, it sounds great with you and I saying it here. The logistics of it would definitely be a little bit difficult to put together on the fly.
Just because of travel and things like that?
I think travel, and listen, I mean, think about it. You're going to have 48 hours to tell a team what, you know, you would have to have, to do it that way and accomplish it in the right way, you would have to have probably 5 days from the time the season ends to the time the playoffs start. And right now you only have 3.
Okay.
Now, is that a hard fix? It's not a terribly hard fix, but you'd need a minimum of 5 days, in my opinion, to be able to make sure you got everything set up properly, had the right travel booked. You got to make sure, you know, yeah. You have to be fair to fans as well. You know what I mean? So logistically, yep. You'd want enough time to put it all together, and that would be 5 days. But listen, if you could pull that off, the other thing that's wild is, you know, Bill Simmons has always talked about that entertaining as hell tournament for the last two playoff spots, where you've had, you know, teams, you know, all the non-playoff teams play a single elimination tournament to see who gets the 8 seed. And that would be like over a 2 or 3 day period in a neutral location. It's one of the more brilliant ideas I've ever heard, just in terms of doing something exciting in the league with teams that stunk all year. Like, it'd be kind of cool. The thing is, if you did that, then you could do the pick the opponent also, because you would actually have some of that time off. You know, so there's different ways to go with this. But right now, I'll tell you this, we got to watch what happens ratings-wise this season in a playoff without LeBron James. That's the weird thing here. And listen, I don't think the league's going to suffer much. I think there's a ton of star power out there right now. But it's kind of a strange feeling covering the NBA going into a playoff and LeBron James is not going to be playing.
Yeah, it's wild. I was saying that to somebody the other day, Gels. If someone had said one of the LA teams is going to be a 6 seed that's kind of battling it out right now for a 7 or 8 seed, and the other one's going to be, you know, 10 games out of a playoff spot, yeah, people would have said, oh, that's easy. LeBron is, you know, it's a 6 seed. It's a little less than what we expected, but, you know, the Clippers are the Clippers, and they're in the lottery again, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, wild. Isn't that crazy that it ended up that way? But
yeah.
Also, you know, I used the word earlier. You know, the Lakers, L.A. and New York are almost mirror images right now with certain things. Because the Lakers are another team that turned around and said, hey, you know what? We have culture now. We have Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka. You know what? You don't really have such great culture there. You know, you have a general manager and a team president kind of working against the coach that the owner wants. All right, you have a star player that's got his agent pulling strings, trying to engineer delivering a player on another team there to the point of saying it publicly and drawing a fine. You know, I mean, you have it, and guys knowing that LeBron tried to get them traded, they don't have culture there. And with the Clippers, they go and they shop certain types of guys, the Pat Beverly types, the Lou Williams type, the Montrezl Harrell types, the guys that roll up their sleeves and do work even with what they did at the deadline. Jermichael Green is that kind of guy. And in the meantime, they stole Zubac from the Lakers. And it was one of those phone calls that the Lakers weren't sure if they were, the Clippers weren't sure if they were being punked or not. And the phone call came in offering Zubac from Mascala. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, really? Like, it was kind of the way that went down. You know what I mean? Like the drunk guy in your fantasy league. That's what Magic and Rob Pelinka turned into with that trade. But you look at the kind of guys that they've shopped and gone after. It's a particular personality that fits. Yes, the contracts have all fit and absolutely been end of year contracts. But listen, you look at these expirings that they have, and look at the 1 year deals the Lakers signed to like Lance Stephenson and JaVale McGee and Michael Beasley and even Rondo, who this year looked like he didn't have it anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's just different types of personalities. The Clippers are after one thing. The Lakers think they have something figured out. They don't have figured out. The Clippers do have it figured out.
It's Brian Geltzeiler, at Hoops Critic on Twitter, SiriusXM NBA, NBA TV as well. Geltz, I know you're gone next week. We'll catch up sometime after the playoffs have started, my man. Go enjoy.
Thanks so much, Shawnee. Look forward to it, buddy. Take care.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.